to another edition of The Exchange presented by Confederation Group. I'm joined, as always, with my co-host, Blake Doyle. What's on the go today, Blake?
Yeah, just a pleasure to be here with you, Sam. This has been a great experience. I think this exchange, both the volume of interest and the topics we're covering have really become something that I think the island needs. So it's great to be back with you.
I agree. I think it's just another, like a different outset on what's happening on PEI and even nationally and globally too. Obviously we focus on PEI public affairs, but kind of everything. And today we have two really good guests that agreed to first two short interviews from two different political parties. So we'll be interested to put them on later too.
And both first timers. So, I mean, this is a great platform, a little bit less sterile maybe than other media platforms. Very, we have a different edge and a little bit more comedic kind of elements than you might find on traditional media. So I think it's fun for our guests and it's certainly fun for you and I. Hopefully listeners find it enjoyable as well. So yeah, in addition to the legislature into its second week, which was supposed to last 2 days, maybe, probably they're going to just keep going. I assume, you know, they're together. They're going to probably prep a budget and get that into the House. Why would you break at this point and come back? Do you have any sense on that, Sam?
I'm on the same boat as you too, especially because they've proven that they can social distance so well and that they can get things done. Because I think there was a lot of skepticism and kind of almost scared that they might infringe upon people or whatever the case may be. But they've proven over the past week or 2 weeks, I guess, that everything seems to be moving as normal, and you can properly social distance as recommended by the Chief Public Health Office, and you're able to get the legislation through as we've seen the past couple weeks.
Who do you think wants to get out of that house first? It's government that want to get out?
Usually always, yeah, the premier probably first because he doesn't want to get – I don't think they mind it, but I think it's usually always the premier because he's the one getting the most backlash over like in question period, the premier always gets the most questions typically. So probably him first, and then I would say second after government would be the Liberal Party because they're getting to the point where they're probably thinking, oh, well, let's get out and get into the community. But the ones who would like to stay the longest, I would say, would be the opposition, the Green Party, because they would want to consistently pepper the government because they have the ability to do so through question period. So the longer they're in, the worse they can make the government look. And obviously that's not always their plan, but that's since they were in the lime or the backstage for the entire COVID kind of the past 12 weeks that they want to be able to kind of put their messaging out through question period. So, opposition Greens want to stay in, but I think the other two parties want to get the hell out.
It's funny you mentioned peppering. You know, there's some peppering from within the ranks. Corey Deagle is getting, he gets better every time he stands up. He's more articulate, he's more passionate, and he's not just going after the health department. Today he was going after the education department. Even Sydney, I think, had a few jabs for Ernie Hudson. So the volleys are not just coming from across the aisle. I think there's a few volleys coming from within the benches.
Yeah, and I think they probably have fun, the backbenchers in the government, doing that. But historically, it's been kind of lobball questions. But we've seen that the two backbenchers on the Tory side, they aren't lobballs at all. They're questions you and I wouldn't want to answer in public at any time soon.
They're tough questions. Anyway, I think it does show that government are able to respond. And I don't think these are questions, at least observing them, they're tough questions. Probably the ministers know about them in advance, but they're not that comfortable answering them, even if they are aware of them. So anyway, interesting session to watch.
Definitely. And I'm assuming we'll go into next week now. I doubt they'll close before then. So like you said, maybe they'll just keep chugging along and do another 2 weeks, get a budget through and see what happens after that.
Now, we've got a couple of great guests that are new to the legislature, but both have very important profiles and are doing some really important work for their respective parties. So I'm kind of looking forward to having them hosted and sharing their comments. They're brief, but it's great to have a couple of representatives from different parties on the exchange.
I agree. So first up, we will have Michelle Beaton, MLA for Mermaid Stratford, and also she's the chair of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. So she is probably the opposition's
she's young and she's up and comer.
And also the one holding government to account financially the most due to her role in public accounts and she's the finance critic for the Green Party. So she just passed a pretty substantial bill a couple days ago regarding giving the Auditor General more leeway to audit when necessary instead of just having the once a year type thing. So that will basically, it's called Follow the Dollar, and she goes over it more in depth than we can talk about, but just talks about why she brought it forward and how it will make a difference down the road.
And then one of her favorite conversation partners in the House is the Minister of Agriculture and, my goodness, Justice and, boy, let's just call it Justice. Just, what's the...
It's Agriculture and Land and Justice and Public Safety. He has two proposals. So yeah, they've been going back and forth quite a bit. And actually today in the House, they went at it together, went at it at each other. It wasn't heckling or anything, but it was just, she was asking questions and he was getting up and answer them. But yeah, that's the Honorable Blois Thompson Minister, as Blake said, or tried to say.
I guess I'm not as familiar with the legislature.
Yeah. So we will queue up our interview with Michelle Beaton first and then be right back. Now we're joined by the MLA for District 5, Mermaid Stratford, a member of the Green Party caucus in the legislature, Ms. Michelle Beaton. How are you today, Michelle?
Great, Sam, and great, Blake. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. In fact, you are representing an area that's very close. In fact, I guess it probably would be the riding that I grew up in. So it's great to have a somebody representing my former homestead on. Now, Michelle, I know you from the Alexander area. I know your family well. But you're not somebody that I kind of seen very active in politics up until your, you know, election in the recent election. Tell us a little bit about your journey to enter political life and how it's been representing your constituents over this past year.
Sure. Thank you. So I think there's usually a trigger that gets you to become involved. And I would have to say one of the many triggers for me would have been the school review. I'm a firm believer that when you ask for public engagement and you get that public engagement, you need to value that. And so I participated in all of those meetings, the public presentations, and I didn't feel like the outcome was what was being discussed at those public presentations. So I guess comes down to if you want to make a change, you need to be part of the process. And over that next year, I kind of went through what does that look like for me. And after I looked at the different parties, where I fit for sure, my values was with the Green Party.
Let's say, you know, that this is exactly the reason why people should seek public engagement and representation. And you know, I commend you for taking this on. Now, it's been a busy year. The whole lot has happened, including you're now the official opposition. You've just survived COVID, which was a kind of an unprecedented, you know, event that nobody kind of anticipated. How has that been? And tell us a little bit about your time in legislature, because you've also had a pretty big impact on the legislative environment as well.
Yeah, I mean, in that first year, there was a lot of learning, right? You know, we had to learn how to bring motions forward, what are bills, talking to people to see what's important to the public and what do they want to see brought forward. Did a lot of committee work in that first year, which is really where my bill, the amendment to the Audit Act, kind of started in its initial stages and then made its way out of the standing committee to a recommendation to the Legislative Assembly, and now is a piece of legislation, which is exciting. It shows that connection between how our standing committees work with our Legislative Assembly. So there's been a learning process, but I have to say it's been something that I've loved doing. I love my work in public accounts and it's just to actually be able to invoke change is something that is a privilege that we're given by sitting in this office or in this chamber. And so I'm proud to be there. And I thank my constituents for helping me get here and putting me here.
Definitely. And you're the first exchange guest ever to be sitting right in the legislature as we speak to you. So that's pretty cool too. One thing. So the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of changes just in terms of the emergency measures from COVID in the legislature, but also newer things. So we have a new Auditor General. And like you just mentioned, Don, that you believe in a financial accountability. So now you put forward a bill that, kind of give the Auditor General a little more duties and a little more free roam to actually do his or her job and audit the government. So do you want to kind of give us a step-by-step explanation of how that bill came forward and how it now is passed the legislation?
Yeah, I can for sure. So where we became aware of Follow the Dollar is by attending a convention. It's the CPAC convention. So it's public accounts. Committee members are there. The Auditor General, clerks of the legislature attend, And one of the segments was on Follow the Dollar and the benefit of accountability of public funds after it leaves government. And so after speaking to the previous Auditor General while we were there, and the Vice Chair, Corey Deagle, who attended that conference as well, it was something that we realized we didn't have and that would be beneficial. So we brought that back as a topic for the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. And so we were able to consult on that and really look at other jurisdictions and what they do. And I value the Office of the Auditor General, and I firmly believe that it's an office full of integrity and public trust, and that needs to be held close, and giving them the powers that they need in order to really look at all public dollars. I think that that's important. And this legislation will allow all of those dollars to be assessed if the Auditor General thinks that it needs to go further. So it is discretionary.
So I guess fundamentally, as a person who sees the debt that the government's accumulating and is a contributor to those public coffers through taxes, I'm sensitive to what the public dollar, where it goes and how it's dispensed. As a business person, is there any concern or has been concern about the reach that the auditor might have into the private sector? So I think if funds are being appropriately used, that should not be a concern, but has there been any pushback on that point of the legislation?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion on that. It's not the intent of this legislation to give carte blanche access to a company's auditable books or full books. When the Auditor General does an audit, it's got a very clear scope. And when there is something that doesn't match, and if they feel like they need to go further, it allows them to go further within that scope. And so it really, I look at this as being beneficial to companies that receive government funds, because it gives them accountability. And when the Auditor General comes out and says that the funds that were received by a company or a corporation are used in the way that it was intended and that it was applied for in the first place, I think that that gives that company a lot of credibility.
Good message to make sure you use public sector funds the way in which they're intended.
Well, I can tell you, Blake, so when I was campaigning, a lot of times I heard people say, where's my money going? Why am I paying all these taxes and I'm not getting the services that I should be getting, or we don't get anything for it? And so it's not always easy for government to reduce the amount of taxes, but what government can do is ensure that that tax money is being used in an efficient way. And to provide any kind of accountability that is not already present, I think that benefits all Islanders, because then we know for certain that the tax dollars are being used to the best interest of all Islanders. So it helps everybody.
And I think when people see it in the news, they might be confused by what the bill means and what is it the direct effects today that's going to happen. But I think this is more of a long-term bill, like we'll see it over time, that we'll say, oh, there's more scrutiny in where's this money going, what's happening. Like, it's not going to affect me right today, but in 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to realize, oh, wow, like we've been able to see exactly where money has gone and who's been maybe overfunded or underfunded because of it.
Well, and possibly, and like I said, it is discretionary, but you're right, Sam. I mean, when it comes down to it, this is really about proper use of government funds. And, you know, I said here in the legislature when we were talking about it, transparency doesn't end with COVID. Good governance includes transparency. So in order to have effective governance, you also have to have transparency and accountability. And so that means identifying what the funds are being used for and having metrics and measures to ensure that the funds were used effectively. And it also shows too that if a program didn't work, then this would also allow us to take that back and say, here's how we can improve that program the next time if we need to use it. And you know, this COVID-19 response is really about creating a playbook that wasn't there before. So if we are going to create a playbook that's good for all Islanders, we need to be open to suggestions and the critical thinking of the Office of the Auditor General. Like they're not there to criticize, it's constructive criticism on how things could have done better. So I think that, yes, you're absolutely right. This goes past COVID-19, but we also want to make sure that, and that's why it was introduced in this sitting, that the Auditor General has the capabilities that they feel that they need. And if they need to invoke this, they can. It's another tool. And I think we should always provide the tools that if we've seen something happen in the past that wasn't, that didn't run smoothly, and we do have examples of that where the Auditor General had issues getting documentation and supporting facts that they were looking for. So if we've seen that happen before, we don't want it to happen again. So as legislators, it's our responsibility to bring forward changes so that we can make it different for the next time.
Congratulations on bringing forth a pretty important piece of legislation on your first session, your first time in, and it's not common actually for opposition parties to bring forward legislation, unanimous consent, so that's a great feather. And I think, as Sam suggested, this is a legislation that will probably long outlast all of us, and it'll be adapted and amended and enhanced over time, but it's an important piece of legislation, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled that it went through unanimously. It was one that came with a lot of questions, and that's what the oversight of this chamber is for. It's for us to be able to talk through different scenarios, how can it be used, and work together in order to provide good policy. And that's what this piece of legislation was. It was just good policy, and it will benefit Islanders for sure.
Well, we look forward to you and your colleagues in the House bringing forth more good policy that will benefit all of Prince Edward Island.
Thank you.
So we usually end off our questions with MLAs. With what's your favorite part about being an MLA so far?
Oh my goodness, what is my favorite part? Do you know what my favorite part is? So being exposed to things that I've never been exposed to. So finding out about organizations that I never knew existed before. Talking to residents in my district that I may have never met before, or I might have known the daughter, I might have known the parents. But truly, the stories that Islanders share with you when you're in MLA it's a privilege. And to know that I have the ability to help them, that part is just unbelievably important to me, and I think that would be my favorite part, knowing things about this island that I never knew before. And when my day is done in this chamber, I will leave smarter, I will leave with more empathy, I will leave with more, just more, not respect, but more gratitude for the people that live in this province.
Well, we suspect you'll be there for a long time, so congratulations on your first piece of legislation passing, and we look forward to having you back in exchange at some point in the future. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Blake.
So there was a brief interview with Michelle Beaton, MLA for Mermaid Stratford. As mentioned, we had her this morning live from the chambers of the Legislative Assembly, so that was pretty cool to see her background, if you do watch her interview on our YouTube page. What did you have to think about the actual bill itself, Blake?
The bill, it's funny, both of these guests are, there's not many degrees of separation of PEI. So prior to their political contributions, I've known both through my children to different events, ballet and basketball at different venues. So it is a small province, and you just never know who you're going to be sitting beside that someday could be a minister or a senior cabinet member of the opposition. So the bill itself, it's interesting. I didn't read the bill, and I made that very clear. And I don't tend to read legislation, but this one, the ramifications are important. And I think, if there's a perception that people have used public money inappropriately outside of government, the intent of this bill is to really lock that down. I think it's going to make a few people pretty uncomfortable, and a lot of private sector businesses really don't want to fall under the guidance or the provisions of the Auditor General. And the last thing I think any private sector business wants, including myself, is an audit. They're awful. The threat of an audit is an uncomfortable experience. And to have, the potential that government could come in and check your books, that's going to make people either very nervous of the prospect or uninterested to get government funding.
I agree. And the only, like, I didn't mention it in our interview, but the only kind of area that might have fell through the cracks in terms of this bill is the not-for-profit sector. So I think it'll probably hurt them whenever they want to apply for money or ask for money, just in the sense that their sole intent is to do good work. And I'm sure there is probably some not-for-profit groups that aren't as honest as they should be, maybe. But I think that's who will, that might need some ramifications down the road or some fixing for the not-for-profit group. But overall, the bill to be able to go and audit whoever gets government funding is well needed and probably past due as well.
And to the spirit of the legislation, if you're doing something inappropriate with government money, you shouldn't be getting it. So, you know, the even the threat that Auditor General could go in and do this, I think maybe if there's an issue, maybe that's going to clear it up. And as somebody who is, you know, always sensitive to how the government uses the money that we provide them, you want that oversight. So, yeah, the spirit of the legislation is important.
I definitely agree. So next up, we have our interview with Minister Blois Thompson. And that was, again, this morning. And it's funny that they actually did go back and forth the question period today. But, yeah, so Blois, we just kind of go over with him his role throughout COVID-19. And what he believes will be the first industry to come back post-COVID is agriculture, actually, and that they can benefit the most from it. And we kind of realize how important agriculture is. Like he said, after a couple of weeks, and there's not enough food in the shelves at the grocery store because the farmers can't get it to market or whatever the case may be. But we realize how important agriculture is, and it will be continue to be important as long as we live.
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting perspective. And, you know, I would look at things in economic terms from the focus of traditional businesses, I guess, like a retail, manufacturing, that sort of thing. But when he talked about business operators in the agricultural sector, who might be the first to emerge, it actually probably makes sense. And if you look at the people affected, usually with a recession, it's the first in is the first out. Tourism operators are probably one of the first ones in. They'll probably be one of the last ones to come out. And I think the minister is probably correct. Agriculture could be one of the first to emerge from this COVID recession.
Yeah, so we will now turn it over to our interview this morning with Minister Blois Thompson. Today we are joined with the Minister of Agriculture and Land, Justice and Public Safety, and Attorney General PEI, and MLA for Stanhope Marshfield, Mr. Blois Thompson. How are you today, Blois?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good, guys.
It's great to have you here, Blois. And I've known Blois for a long time. In fact, we've known each other from ballet. So it's been quite a number of years that we've known each other.
You're a much better dancer than I am.
Well, just to clarify, our daughters were in dance. We were quiet parents. Right. Waiting patiently at the door. Thanks for taking some time today, Blois. I know you're busy with the very complicated portfolios and you're still in the House. I just wanted to ask a few questions. You've been now elected member for a year. Tell us a little bit about that journey and what it's been like, you know, coming into this public arena and having a couple of pretty important portfolios.
Yeah, it's been great. Of course, no one expected COVID or a hurricane during your first year of office, but it's been great. I really enjoy the two departments that I have. Agriculture, of course, I'm quite comfortable with an agriculture background myself. And but justice and public safety has been very interesting for me. It's intriguing. There's a lot of moving parts in justice that just makes it very interesting, and I'm enjoying every day of it.
And as you've got a pretty good grounding in agriculture, has it been difficult to kind of take on this new portfolio that's now become a really pivotal, you know, through all this COVID situation? Has that been a big adjustment on top of a very complicated portfolio with what's going on in agriculture?
Yeah, well, justice and public safety has been at the forefront a lot of the time. You know, Hurricane Dorian, we were, EMO was activated there, and then we had the malware cyber attack, which we kind of all forgot about. That was in February. And then, of course, COVID. And it's the staff that are in the department that make it enjoyable and make it easy. We have tremendous people that run in each directors in each department. And it's a great opportunity to work with a couple great deputies in a short period of time. So it's made the transition in justice and public safety nice.
So obviously no politician or elected official expects to come into a crisis slash pandemic type of deal. So how are you able to kind of manage your portfolio before COVID and then now during COVID kind of amplified? And how are you able to kind of manage the pressures and stresses of that?
Well, it has been I'll not lie. It has been stressful. And there's been, you know, there's been some sleepless nights over the past few months with COVID and the added pressure. And we had to make a lot of decisions without a playbook. There's no playbook, and we're just trying to figure it out with the best information from Dr. Morrison, who has been the key player in this role, and she's been terrific on her guidance. And you know, we just have to. It took a lot of common sense approach to things, and I think that's where this government is strong, is in its common sense, and it's trying to get things done.
I think most people would agree that the stable sort of constant communication, which you're a big part of, really helped to calm nerves at a difficult time. Now, if you look at the capital markets, my sense is, well, in fact, big business has recovered. We're up to new highs in the indices, but I think small business is going to have a little bit more challenge. As you come through this last stages of your second legislative sitting, any reflections on how that experience has been going? You've got two now under your belt, two short ones. Yep. How's that been?
It's the first, every session is getting more, I'm getting more comfortable with, of course. I didn't have the experience of being in the House before this. A lot of my colleagues were opposition, so they had the feel of the House, and all of a sudden I was put in a place where I had two portfolios and questions firing at you, and it was pretty stressful the first two go arounds. But I'm very comfortable with it now, and it's a great experience and a great honor to sit in the legislature.
And like just before we hit record too, we kind of talked about what a post-COVID world might look like. And since agriculture is so vitally important to Prince Edward Island, what do you think that will look like in terms of the business aspect of agriculture moving forward?
I really think agriculture has a huge opportunity to be the first industry in this country to be to rebound and to flourish. It took a few bare shelves at the grocery stores during a pandemic to give Canadians realization that food is essential, farmers are essential. The public trust has swung back into the farmers' hands again, and I think with the COVID and the realization of the importance of food. I think I read in the Globe and Mail a quote from someone where we were, with all our sophistication, we were still just 6 inches of topsoil and a farmer away from disaster. So we still have to feed the world. And I think people realize that now. And they really do care where their food comes from. And I think Prince Edward Island has a huge opportunity to be the first out of the gate. We know our tourism isn't going to be great this year, and we don't even know what it's going to be like next year. And our fishery, obviously, this year is going to struggle. So of our three main primary industries on this island, agriculture has an opportunity. I mean, we were lucky here during COVID that we had processing. We had our three major processors, our Atlantic Beef Plant, our ADL, our dairy, and our Cavendish Farms, our French fries. Without those, it would have been a different story, but we have those, and I think we have a great opportunity here.
You know, I think as a consumer through this period, food security has been an issue. You mentioned that with the stock shelves, but I think food sourcing and traceability is also a consideration. I think more people now are wanting to support local. You see that with the fishers right now, but I think you see it in the agriculture sector too. How do farmers pivot? Because it is going to be difficult, especially maybe for the agricultural, some of the crops or maybe surpluses. How can farmers pivot? It's going to be a difficult year, but how do they come out of this stronger and better positioned to feed the world again?
I think it's modernization is one thing. With traceability, there's a great opportunity to add the technology to our businesses, our agricultural businesses now. And people want to buy local, and that is absolutely great, and we want to focus on that. But we have to also remember that Prince Edward Island is an exporting province, $500 million of agriculture exports a year. So buy local is great, but our population is only about 160,000. So we got to support within, but we also have to export. So, but I think technology is the way, and efficiencies with, and we have to be environmentally conscious now, and we have to do everything that we can to modernize and make it efficient.
And just before we wrap up, one last question. What's your favorite part about being an elected official so far?
My favorite part.
And not including the COVID cycle, because that probably has its challenges. So.
You know what? I like coming to work every day, and I have a lot of staff, and I like the interaction I have with the staff. You actually get to see the big picture, see how things are happening. You know, agriculture is we're always pushing the boundary to make things better and to improve the industry, and justice. It's the same. It's about people, and I think that's what I enjoy the most about.
Well, we thank you for your time today, Minister Thompson. I know you've got a lot in your schedule. It's great to connect with you and get your perspectives in the legislature. The coming months, I mean, I'm pretty excited that the economy is recovering, and I think the government's got us in a good footing. So I look forward to see what your government brings forth in the next couple of quarters to really stimulate all sectors of the economy, not just agriculture. And that, I'm sure, will be rolled out soon. But thank you so much for your time today.
No, I appreciate it. And with that, I think it's important, and you guys are big thinkers and think outside the box, and I think that's going to be important going forward post-COVID. We got to do things differently, and that's the way we're going to succeed.
Right on. Well, we'll certainly have you on again.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. Take care.
There's our interview with Minister of Agriculture, Land, Justice, and Public Safety, and Attorney General Blois Thompson. Him and Blake go way back to the ballet days, so it was good to have him on.
It's funny, I don't think he was expecting that comment, and why would you? But he was both members and both participants today were very gracious with their time, and they're busy people. They're preparing for the House, and we certainly appreciate them coming on. So, a few things that came up from these conversations. One of which was, what's happening in the economy. Sam, you did a little bit of research earlier this week on some statistics that just came out. StatsCan, what is happening there, and what have you discovered from your deep dive?
On Monday, StatsCan released its GDP growth by industry for provinces and territories. And while maybe in the past administration, the opposition said that this GDP, no one cares about GDP, no one cares about the economic indicators. However, what came out Monday, it just proves that PEI continues to lead the country in GDP growth. And what I believe from these numbers is that it kind of gave PEI a little more cushion whenever COVID did hit, because if we were where we were 4 or 5 years ago, we probably would be much more underground and not in a good economic position at all. And not to say COVID won't impact us heavily, but it's just that little extra runway that we have. So across all industries in 2019, PEI led the country yet again with a growth of 4.5%. And what really is exceptional is that over a four-year period, so from 2015 to 2019, our GDP grew 14.6%. And the next closest was BC at 12.9%. So almost full 2 percentage points higher than the next closest province. And BC obviously has been kind of a powerhouse province the past number of years. Even further to that, so GDP growth in the goods producing industries. So this is things like, we don't have them, but mining, oil and gas, manufacturing, agriculture, fisheries, things that kind of you find in the ground or are planted and kind of built goods producing, I guess that's pretty self-explanatory. But we grew over the past 5 years, total of 26.9%. So to grow almost a full third, or over a quarter, so almost a full third over 5 years is exceptional. And it's almost 14 percentage points higher than the next closest province again, which was BC. So I think that kind of is a testament to our agriculture, to our fisheries, to our construction, and to our manufacturing industries that literally have been able to prop PEI up enough that we might be able to weather COVID a little bit better than the other provinces.
You might even suggest, Sam, not to put words in your mouth, but you might even say that PEI has been on a tear. Now, the problem with some of these statistics is that they do lag. So, and I agree, certainly for the last, almost 5 years, we've had a pretty strong economy relative to other parts of Canada, most strong, most recently. Any thoughts on what's driving that growth? Why are we disproportionately outperforming our sister provinces? And I think it does give us a cushion. The shorter lived this little economic downturn is, the quicker we'll bounce out of it. And to have that cushion is really important. There's only one answer I'm looking for. I might have to give it to you. But, you know, the growth is really a function of population growth and investment. And, you know, we've been a benefactor. And if you look at our population statistics, I think that's been a big driver of our success.
Yeah, and there was a certain premier who kind of led the way. I won't name names, but you know who it was.
Jason Kenney.
No, but yeah, I think maybe him too, but that's out west. He might have brought the price of oil up, but it's not too good now.
But I think, you know, it's interesting. I had a conversation this week through the, I'm on the board of the Summerside Chamber. We had a Atlantic Chamber conference call with Perrin Beatty, who's the president of the Canadian Chamber. And, you know, I peppered him with a question. I presented a question on the need for immigration and growth. And a couple of elements to that question, and he was uniformly supportive. So I think there's an acknowledgement that we have benefited from progressive immigration, and I am optimistic that if we want to recover, as every province does and every jurisdiction, that will be a part of the recovery. So hopefully government are listening. I'm sure they are. They always listen to our podcast.
Now that all the government MLAs are going to be jealous that Blois was on, so they're going to have to, they're going to be requesting. We'll have a long lineup out the door for interviews.
Well, maybe we could have a lottery. I think there's
we'll bid our services. You can come on if you pay us.
There's lots of MLAs that we'd love to have. In fact, maybe Info PEI might want to be a sponsor of the exchange.
Never know. We could be a Doug Ford type government propaganda wing.
Sam Nation.
Maybe we can discuss that next week. But yeah, so unless you have anything else, I think we'll wrap up this week's episode.
No, I think it was great to see the respectful members in the House challenging each other. There's the progressive things happening. I'm sure they want to get out and enjoy the sunshine, but, you know, they've got work to do. They've had some time off. Maybe they should stay and finish their budget and complete the business of the House.
I would have to agree. Well, this has been another edition of The Exchange presented by Confederation Group. As always, I'm Sam McPhail. With me, Blake Doyle. We'll catch you next week. We'll